Going. Yep.
Hey, good morning, everyone. There's only a couple of us on who know the antitrust policy, so we're going to skip that. So we have me, Todd, and Vipin, and we all know each other, so we don't need to introduce each other. So, talk about reaching out, Todd's email, reaching out to different groups. The question would be, do we have a preference of TPC or SPAC? We have reached out to STAC, and it's, you know, not getting any response. So,
is there a reason not to reach out to both TPC and SPAC? TPC has been, you know, they're not dead,
right?
They've recently done an IoT benchmark, and so they've got, you know, they're trying to, I think, do some of the stuff in this area, but. I would say we'd partner with whomever, you know, sort of benchmark standards groups make sense. Okay. And if they want to participate, great. If they don't, well, then, you know, that's their loss.
Okay.
That'd be my view of it. And, you know, they're probably in a better position to try to figure out what benchmark makes sense for their target audience.
Right.
Whether that's Provenance supply chain, whether it's, you know, track and trace, whether it's anything, they might have a better idea about what they think their members and their audience would like. At least to see if they have any interest at all in blockchain. I would think they would. You know, TPC, I'm sure, must have been trying to remain relevant. Sorry. Spam calls, love them. And you know, TPC historically has provided benchmarks for a variety of different technologies, although, you know, it tends to be, maybe late. They don't tend to be early adopters as far as, like, you know, they did the big data stuff. They did, you know, data warehousing benchmarks and a variety of others. So I just think it'd be worthwhile, and SPAC as well. STAC, I'm happy to stay away from, cause I just financial markets, I don't think are the prime target for Hyperledger. I mean, it's not that they're not, but there's a lot of other stuff outside financial. Financial already gets a lot of interest.
So. Right. Now, I have worked with SPAC before. I was on the SPAC Vert committee. And then when they started up SPAC Cloud, I was on that for 6 months before we... you know, I transitioned to a slightly different role, so I pushed that work off to someone else. So I'm familiar with how SPAC works. I'm assuming TPC is the same.
Yeah, I've only ever worked with TPC in terms of helping folks in our organization run some of their benchmarks. I've not dealt with TPC as, you know, definition of benchmarks or how to get those included. So,
right.
But I, you know, I think it was when you were taught to reach out to both. Have we tried to reach out to SPAC?
I've only reached out to our guy, who's like the main liaison, and he just said, "Yeah, they're not looking at anything yet." But I will change the tune and say, "Okay, Hyperledger wants to work with TPC or SPAC or both." You know, who can you put me in touch with?
Yeah, I think there's a lot of value in that, because I think, you know. We've got the white paper done. We've got metrics defined, and you hear claims in the market about, you know, absurd numbers, right? I can't remember what it was, blockchain DB or somebody claiming 1 million transactions per second or whatever. And I go, yeah, okay, in what universe? And so I, you know, as I mentioned in my email, I think people are starting to move into production or pre-production kind of environments, and are going to want to know, you know, is the platform they have, is it going to support the kind of volumes they have? I suspect they've done testing, but it would be nice to have sort of something that they could use before they even get that far to be able to evaluate the different platforms, because the, you know, our platforms are widely differing. Sawtooth and Fabric are very different in terms of how they're, or the architecture of those platforms, in terms of how they achieve consensus, how they do all sorts of stuff. So, I don't know. You guys would be awful quiet, or maybe I'm just dominating the call.
I just, you know, as chair, I let people talk. my thing is to sort of enable the conversation. I try not to lead them in certain directions usually. That's why I haven't really responded to any of the email threads yet.
Okay.
I just want other people to chime in and not feel like I've made a decision. Sometimes people do that when the chair speaks. Not Fitbit, but other people do that.
I'm not shy.
So Vipin and I had actually had an IRC chat or a rocket chat before I sent the mail. So some of the ideas in the email were sort of from him. But one of the things, you know, was like I saw we had a good turnout the day the Fast Fabric people came. And that's, you know, personally, I enjoy that kind of work more than going off and defining specs and writing, you know, documents. From a personal level, you know, that's more enjoyable to me is going off and looking at performance issues. And I also see, you know, any questions from outside we get on the mailing list or rocket chat to our channel aren't about, hey, you know, when's your call? I want to join. It's, well, I'm trying to improve performance of fabric or, you know, I'm trying to do this. And so, you know, part of this is, I want to do what people on, you know, that are in the group want to do. That's one way to recruit people is to do stuff that they want to do. Right. So,
right. Yeah.
But you know, what makes the most sense.
But if there are no people in the group, what do they want to do?
Probably not what we're doing, right?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's a combination of factors there, you know? I mean, some of the stuff that Todd said is correct, that, you know, obviously we don't, you know, as more and more stuff is going to production, people are actually focused on what they're doing. Earlier, it was more of a learning thing, and they thought that working in these groups would give them that exposure, but I think there is a, you know, it's always like this, right? They're going to build stuff. It's not going to perform. Then they're going to come running, saying, what can we do to improve this stuff? I mean, that's, you know, it's this is what happens in software all the time. Everybody knows everything, right?
They don't know. Worked great on my laptop.
Yeah. I'm going to run the whole thing on my laptop. Two nodes.
Would it make sense, you know, just, I don't know if this makes sense or not, but I'll put it out there. Would it make sense to email those who have participated in the past and ask what they would like? You know, is it tuning advice? You know, is that what they're really looking for? Do they want to know how to get the best performance out of Sawtooth or the best performance out of Fabric or one of the other platforms? You know, maybe it's a matter of we need to figure out what our audience is for these working groups. And what, because that seems like what you guys are getting at, right? If people are here because they can't get the performance they need, then, you know, dealing with stack or spec or TPC doesn't really make any sense because that doesn't help them.
Right. I mean, and so it's, you know, I know three of the main people that aren't here. You know, Dan's on sabbatical. I don't know if he'll come back to this group when he comes back. Now that he's chair of the TSC, he has, you know, additional responsibility that eats up his time as well. Mark Simpson changed jobs, and he's he's doing consulting work. So it's harder for him to make time when he's at a customer site to come join the call. And Guy was, I don't want to say part-time, but he's a solution architect or something like that. So he's always doing customer engagements, which again makes it hard for him. Harish moved.
How about Harish? Yeah.
He moved to the West Coast. He moved to the West Coast after he graduated.
Okay.
So, you know, it's a 6 o'clock in the morning call for him.
Well, that's a good question. Would changing the time help anybody? I don't know. That's a good question.
Yeah. I mean, we've floated that idea before and no one really came back and said, yeah, let's change the time. I'm happy to change the time or do, you know, I think Hyperledger in general needs to figure out this. How do we run meetings where we, you know, stagger times so that people from all over the world can participate, but then we have to make sure we don't do a split brain kind of thing.
Right.
So, in that context, I'm doing an experiment tomorrow. I'm going to run the same meeting twice. Once at 12 noon for the identity working group and at 8 p.m.
Interesting. Okay. This is for the identity working group?
Yes.
Okay.
We are having the same or similar problems there, you know. I mean, it's never like three people, but it's usually used to be like 15. Now it's down to like six, four.
Oh, interesting.
Five, you know. Last couple of meetings. And I don't know, you know, it's like, I don't think we're getting visibility. We are not getting any promotion.
Yeah, and
people
I noticed,
don't see the usefulness, probably. I don't know. But I've just listed a brief summary of what we do in the identity working group in that email. Nowhere else is that happening. I can tell you that.
Yeah, I mean, and part of it is I see some of the Fabric teams put their agenda in Confluence rather than email, or maybe they email it as well. And so maybe I just need to start, you know, investing more time to do that.
I was just looking at that, by the way, for Fabric and like the maintainers, because they're voting at the moment to boot two maintainers who haven't contributed in the last 3 months. And I look at it and, you know, the participation in terms of maintainers from a variety of organizations is just no longer there in Fabric. I think it's down to one maintainer maybe who's not IBM.
Yeah, it's Jonathan, right?
Jonathan, I didn't see. Okay, maybe. But it's you know, it seems like it's moving back to pre graduation or whatever to call it when we went from incubation into formal project status.
Yeah, but the guys they're booting, let's talk about them. One is Greg Haskins. I would never have called, anyway, that's a separate story.
Yeah, we're cool.
I don't want to get into that. What I really want to get into
is you can't just say somebody is a maintainer and a contributor when they're doing is not working on core stuff. They're working on like writing scripts. I mean, important stuff, I'm sure, but this whole, you know, multi-vendor thing is a farce, because if you look at it, who are the actual people writing the most important things? The data access, the networking layers, the consensus layers, the core components.
It's all IBM.
Single vendor solutions, and they're trying to pretend that it's not. I know,
right? Sawtooth, I suspect, is the same way, right? Although I've not looked at their repos.
No, but either it's directly or indirectly, right? I mean, it's guys who they pay,
right? So Bitwise is Bitwise is contracted to Intel, so Sean and those guys from Bitwise are, you know, effectively being paid by Intel. So,
okay.
So
it's diversity. So we're facing diversity issues, if you will, in everything, right? And participation issue. The people you're saying are participating is because they're paid to participate, not because they're interested in participating for whatever other reason.
But this is the problem with open source and enterprises anyway. But the whole point is that in the end, all this stuff, think about who wrote the core components of Linux. Probably less than 10 guys. Bitcoin, less than 10 guys make most of the contributions. I mean,
actually,
80 to 90.
It's actually down to, I think, 4 or 5. I was just on a panel down at South by Southwest discussing that. And yeah.
No, it has never been more than that. It has never been.
Yeah, right, right.
It is not like it changed all of a sudden. So, determined contributors who are small in number, but technically aware and very dedicated, can make a difference. In fact, they do make a difference.
Right, but I think part of that is the size and complexity of the open source software base, right? I mean, you look at Sawtooth, you look at Fabric especially, I don't know how many, tens of thousands of lines of code it is, but it's a lot. And unless that's a part of your job responsibility, it's going to be rather daunting, I think, for somebody to contribute.
So maybe that's the other way, like look at, identity or performance specific PRs and publicize them in the performance and scale working group and say, look, you got like 2 or 3 things that you could work on Jira wise in performance and scale. And it's very focused. It's here. It's in this particular area. So that's one thing. And the other thing is this whole business with open source or anything else, it's always just a small group. Even in Ethereum, which supposedly has 15,000 guys, but how many guys actually write code that goes into
Ethereum? There's no way. Yeah, there's no way it's even a fraction of that.
Yeah, this, 5, 10, Corda, the same thing. So I don't see that as a problem, but I see it as a problem when those 4 or 5 guys are doing it because of their job and they don't have any incentive to talk to a broader community and get the, their interests shaped. So the usually the profile of successful, huge open source community comes through a few dedicated guys making the initial cut and then having some of them be responsive to the broader community that make changes. And of course, it's also chance and so many other things that create the virtuous cycle. I don't know, in terms of Linux, how many years it took for them to get, to the number of core contributors they have today. And I suspect it took more than 10 or 15 years. It's a long game. It's not like going to be over in a couple of days. Everybody wants results tomorrow.
I'm not giving you that long.
Yeah.
I want them this afternoon, damn it.
So, Mark, have you talked to Tracy about this at all?
Tracy's not with Hyperledger anymore.
Oh, okay. I'm behind the times.
Yeah, she left a while ago.
Oh,
couple
okay.
of months. Yeah, I need to talk to Salona, I think.
Okay. Oh, that's the person. Okay. Somebody mentioned her when I was down in Austin. And I'm going, who?
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, I mean, she responded to the email thread. But it's like, oh, fix, improve your wiki. It's like, well, that's part of the problem.
Is it visibility that's the interest or the problem or interest?
I think it's a combination, right? I mean, we have to figure out what people want to do. I mean, we can be, you know, flashing lights on the front page of the landing page, but if, you know, it's not what people want to do, they'll click on it and then just say, yeah, not for me. So, it you know, it's a combination.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I would have thought performance and scale would have got would get a lot of interest. I mean,
well, I think it does, but you know, look at the people that will join the call for one or two calls, and it's like, yeah, you know, I'm working at a company, and we want to see what we can do to improve performance of Fabric or something, and they're here for one or two calls, and they don't come back because we're not talking about improving Fabric. We're talking about prominence and writing. Writing a spec for Providence, right? I mean, there's a need for that, but, you know, they don't want to be the people doing it.
Right. Well, I'm, and the more I think about it, the more you discuss it and stuff like that, maybe ours is not the group to do that.
Right. Right?
And maybe that's part of the problem is that people, as you say, people come here to focus on performance stuff and we're talking about use cases, that there's a disconnect there.
Right.
And there are, right, there is a working group on Providence, is there not?
There's working group, well, there's a project on supply chain, then there's a SIG right. on supply okay. chain, I think.
Okay. I don't think they have met SIG on supply chain, but trade finance working group should be into that. There is a, I went to China, right? I went to Hong Kong. There is huge interest over there on all kinds of stuff. But, you know, obviously communication is a problem. Time zone is a problem. I spoke to, you know, a few people about the architecture of whatever they're working on, you know, like, Caliper guys. I had a maybe half an hour to 45 minute private conversation with Victor. And I said to him, look, you know, we got to have a way to integrate all of this stuff into a dashboard like thing. Meaning, suppose I'm writing a specific work on I'm doing specific work on a proof of concept, a MVP or something that has that's doing some transactions. So I have the transactions. I have the, you know, the main driver of my use case up front, and then I have panels on the side that would tell me, you know, do I have the right kind of, you know, are my transactions hitting? What is the kind of visibility I have? And that could be tuned, meaning like I could see them if I wanted to check whether there's a problem or not. And the other kind of side panel I would have, especially in the beginning, would be something that checks some kind of performance metrics. Caliper Observer could be pulled out and used to time these things. So for all of that, you need some kind of composability of all these different components using, let's say, some API. So that's something you could talk about, right? I mean, you could talk about what would be best to put in an API if you have Caliper being done like that to be composed into an application, which is, it's a very practical thing. So, you know, there are a lot of different avenues to go down and, you know, how would you make that happen? You know, in a performance and scale specific, you know, what are the kinds of information you would need, which could be a takeoff from our paper that we already have and somehow try to and then try to tie it to the transaction. These are the ways in which we could make a difference, but it requires work. You know, it's not, it requires Caliper guys to show up, first of all.
For us to show up at their meeting.
Yeah. So that's what I've been trying to do, try to show up at other people's meetings to drive interest. Yeah. I don't know. I mean, these are the few suggestions I had, but, you know, they're not coherent. So we got to have some kind of a rebooting working groups kind of thing. Or first of all, is it even needed? I mean, are the working groups useful? I mean, you know, to hell with it, right?
Right.
Disband all of them.
By the way, we have a new participant here.
Yeah, I was gonna welcome Kent. Good day, Kent.
Oh, hi, Caliper. We were just talking with Caliper.
He heard you. He joined.
Oh, hi there. Sorry, everyone. I was just typing a message to you all to not interrupt your flow.
No, why don't you tell us a little bit about you? We're trying to figure out, you know, are we going in the right direction as this group? And I don't recognize your name as joining before, so why are you here?
Oh, okay.
What are you interested in? Well, I don't mean that. It's like, what are you interested in?
Okay, so I attended the Hyperledger Bootcamp about 10 days ago. And specifically, I went to learn about the Hyperledger Caliper team and what they're doing. And I got sucked in, and I'm a new volunteer for Caliper now. So anything you need, just let me know. So most of the team are in China. So we have a time zone difference. We have a language difference. We have lots of differences. So anything you need, you're just far away.
Cool. Careful what you say, though.
I am a bit of a newbie because I'm still learning about Fabric and Sawtooth. So I'm not too good with the technical side, but I'm helping out with the documentation. So I'm sort of a signing for the mailroom sort of job.
Well, I mean, documentation is important.
Yeah, it seems to be neglected.
Overlooked for open source. Yeah.
Open source. And also,
so I found so many problems with Caliper. So it was a 2-day boot camp, and I still couldn't get it to work on my laptop after 2 days. So it was that bad. Basically, the dependencies were broken, and the instructions weren't very good for a newbie, and a lot of the stuff I didn't know what was going on. So it's very easy to cut and paste if everything works, but as soon as something doesn't work, you get error messages, then, you know, that's what a newbie faces when they come to Hyperledger in general, or blockchain in general, really.
Yeah, I think, Lisa, I know in the Fabricate, part of it is because so much stuff sort of depends upon, like, build your first network or whatever. And It doesn't explain what's going on behind the scenes. So if you're trying to run it in a different environment, yeah, it's basically hit or miss is whether you get enough information.
Well, mostly miss in my case. So well, I know what you're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the case in most of these. They are not achieve the polish in terms of, for example, I went to see the Caliper guys, and they said, you don't have a Linux laptop or a Unix laptop, so please don't even come.
That's terrible. Well, the funny thing is, I actually brought a Linux laptop specifically, and it still didn't work, so there was no excuse.
No, but the point is that, you know, obviously there is a huge number of, especially enterprise clients who use, you know, a different operating system.
Sure.
And if you are not set up to do that, then, you know, there is a problem. But just now we were talking about it from a different angle that, you know, Caliper as a standalone tool is one thing, but I talked with Victor at length at the Hyperledger Bootcamp. I was there too, but you know.
Oh, great!
I didn't meet you. Yeah. I'm sorry.
It's okay.
So I was giving that lecture about the unity of all blockchains. That was the
right. You might remember my little talk in the morning when I got up on stage and I said, I'm the guy who's banged my head against the wall. That was me on stage.
Okay. Yeah.
So my idea was to put things into a live USB, like a functional sandbox, because as a newbie, you know, there's nothing more demoralizing when nothing works. You just go home, you've wasted a whole day, basically.
Yeah. Thing in a box concept was raised even by some other people in Basel.
What happened?
Right?
Yep.
Because, I mean, these are guys who have had lots of years of experience running these kind of things where, you know, if you can have everything on a stick.
Exactly.
Then, you know, you just distribute the sticks.
Yep.
And that's it. You got something there.
That's right. Now, at least it's fully functioning.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is a great idea. And I think it should be, because if you had gone to, like, let's say the session for EVM fabric integration.
Okay.
Where you could write chain code in Solidity and it could run under fabric. Because it would, the EVM was compatible with
chain code.
But half the time, or even 75% of the time, was spent in following these command lines that and people couldn't get the stuff to work. It was like system administration.
Permission errors, dependency broker, and couldn't find this. Yeah.
Yeah. So this this is a big problem across all of these.
Well, in a way, I feel it's a bit of a conspiracy. I mean, I am generally a conspiracy theorist, but it seems to me that IBM designed Fabric to be so difficult, so many problems, and using Go, the most difficult language, that any error, any mistake will just not work. They did it deliberately. I just feel that they said, okay, here we go. This is Fabric. You know, if you're good enough to play with it, then go and use it. If you're not good enough, then come and hire us, basically. I feel that's the IBM approach. But hey, it's so.
We have been recorded, by the way.
It's okay. It's just an opinion. It's just an opinion.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, it's a valid opinion. Yeah. Like anyway, opinion.
Let's get back to point. We've got 15 minutes left. What do you want me to do from Caliper?
Yeah. So Caliper wise, I was talking to Victor.
Yep.
And I was saying that since Caliper is a performance measuring tool.
That's right.
It would be good if you could integrate, let's say, I'm writing any application. Let's say supply chain. Let's say a financial market application. Sure. So I have my regular transactions, right? Going through. And then I have a composability architecture where I can take Caliper components, especially the observer, or any other kind of thing, to put it in a pane that is, of course, not always visible, but could be made to be visible, on a tunable basis from the front end, and that I could just plunk it into my application. And
it sounds like a plug and play, right? Just plug it in and just let it run, basically.
Yeah, so some kind of an API with some simple steps saying, okay, run this component on your node and have this thing in your front end, and they will communicate. There's a web front end, and we can then the same thing for Explorer, same thing for other components, so that we have a fully functioning dashboard that would help me create my application and measure it and troubleshoot it and do all kinds of, you know, sort of DevOps-y kind of stuff with it.
Sure, sure.
And I could also put it as part of my agile, you know, methodology where I'm exposing it to my clients, with to my business guys. And if they run into any problems, I can just give them a simple instruction, do this, and then snapshot the screen and send it to me, you know.
Right.
And then I can I can troubleshoot it further. And then I can correlate it with the logs that are thrown off of Caliper or any other component. Victor said that, you know, that, you know, that they are going to be working on it, but they are a long way from that, right? I mean, in terms of...
From what I've seen at the bootcamp, it was a very short 2 days, but from what I've seen from their working model on their laptop, it seems like it's just a few parameters they're measuring. So transmissions per second, successes and failures. So I know I'm new to all this, so tell me more about it. If, you know, what parameters have you seen? What parameters do you want? If it's just a simple, you know, success, failure, TPS, then you can just literally go to Fabric and get them to do it. You know, I mean, why do you need Caliper to do it?
Well, because Caliper has two things going for it. One is independence.
Okay.
Second is they are supposed to be able to do this for multiple blockchains.
Sure.
And they are able to, you can generate load as well independently through a configurable interface. So you can generate loads, you know, and not humanly possible, right? In the sense that suppose you have five different clients, you could have the equivalent of five different Caliper components generating load simultaneously, stressing the system.
Right.
I mean, all this could be driven from a from an administrative console if we had all these setups. Yeah, measurement, you're right. I think they are pretty basic. I don't know, Mark, do they follow the things that you're outlined in your in our document, initial document, performance and scale metrics?
I think
where is that document?
We have it in the... Go ahead.
It's on the wiki.
Google Docs.
It's on the wiki, right? You should, through performance and scale, you should be able to find metrics white paper.
Okay, I'll go look for it. I'll let Mark keep talking while I search.
I was going to say, as I was noticing you had joined earlier, one of my concerns with Caliper right now, and Caliper had sort of done its incubation under the guidance of this working group. But one of my concerns is the Fabric people aren't using Caliper. They have their own performance test suite that they use. So we need to, you know, figure out can we help Caliper? You know, why isn't Fabric using it? They, on the call a couple of weeks ago, they had listed some reasons. And so I think we need to, you know, take those back to the Fabric, to the Caliper team and say, okay, you know, let's get these fixed. We want this to be the benchmark tool of choice, and go from there, you know. In theory, those two groups should be working close together.
I think I missed that call, Mark. Did Fabric say why they weren't using Caliper, or what tool, or maybe a better question is, what tool are they using? Because I know they have a bunch of ledger test tools, but I don't recall end-to-end performance testing tool.
Well, this was the Fast Fabric talk. You were on the call, I think.
They were
using the ones that come. I think maybe they had done their own, but I think Chris mentioned that, yeah, Fabric doesn't use Caliper either, because there were some things. I'll go back and listen to that call.
Okay. Yeah, because that's, you know, we've used their, what they call performance test, something, whatever, but it's all really focused on sort of ledger tests as opposed to end-to-end kind of testing, which I think Caliper is definitely focused on. So it'd be interesting to hear. Maybe I can ping Chris and see if he can let me know what they're using. Because the tests they're using basically really isolate sort of the state of the world database and the ledger updates, and not end to end.
Do you work with do you guys use Caliper?
We are, and actually I was going to ask Kent if I can get a contact information because we have a team that's focused just on performance for our products, and they do across products or cross offerings. Right. And they've been using Caliper as well as some of their own testing tools, and it might be worthwhile to have Kent, if you're involved in the Caliper development, maybe just get their feedback as to what their experience is like using the tool to performance test Fabric. That's what our service is based on.
Can we have some of them show up here?
I can ask. That's a good question. That's a good question, Vipin. Let me ping the group and see if I can get one of them at least to participate for a little while here. The difficulty is they're West Coast, so it's 6 a.m. for them.
So
we can do a special meeting, do like two meetings in a day, like Vipin's trying with identity, or alternate weeks have it at a later time to pull in other people.
That might make more sense, I think, is to maybe do the alternate, because right now, I'm also in the privacy and confidentiality one that only meets every other week anyway.
Right.
And so maybe if this one met at two different times, we'd be able to get some crossover and be able to, access other groups, because this is also not a convenient time for Asia. Thank you, Kent, for checking in, because it's got to be
no problem. What,
7 or 8 o'clock at night.
10 p.m. at the moment.
10 p.m. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's 12 hours.
Some of the working groups are like midnight or 2 a.m. and that's why nobody comes from Europe from Asia, because it's like 2 a.m. in the morning.
Right. Yep.
So I've written a quick note to the Caliper team in China, and I'm just asking them to quickly come on the Zoom conference if they're available.
Oh, you mean now,
Mark?
Someone call me.
Yeah. We've got seven more minutes, Mark. Yeah, I was gonna say, why don't we? What does it take to do that, to switch to alternating times? Is that just something you decide unilaterally, or is there some process for that?
I think, I probably have the power to do it, but I'd rather, if people want to make a change, I'd rather, have people agree with it.
Why don't we do a list of questions so that when they actually come, they can actually come prepared with answers or ideas?
No, are you on the Performance and Scale Working Group mailing list, Kent?
Not yet. So,
I sent a mail out last night to that list about what we can do to, is this group headed in the right direction? What do people want to see? So I wasn't sure if you were joining the call because of that, or I think it's more coincidental at this point, but that's fine.
Yes. Serendipity, I like to think.
Yeah.
So Mark, I'd like to propose we move to sort of alternating schedule like that.
Okay.
I'm happy to do it anyway. I have to work with teams in India and China in any case. So, and those meetings generally are either held early my time or late my time. So.
Well, this is early your time now, isn't it? 8 o'clock.
Moderately. I mean, yeah, it's fine. Yeah.
Yeah, I have one call on Friday mornings at 7 a.m. with Europe. I'm like, okay. Slopes aren't open yet. I can do it. They don't open until 9, so I can do the meeting and still get over the mountain. So. Well, what time would we – should I do a doodle poll for the second meeting? The second
– what call?
Doodle poll. Poll online where people can come put time in. I don't know what time would work best for people.
I'd suggest you do that. That's fine. Yeah.
If you're interested in Asia, East Asia in particular, Hong Kong and so on,
yep.
It would be probably better to do it in the evening. That's what the feedback I got from several people were, like, they wanted me to do something like an 8 p.m. call. But then we would lose almost all of Europe and even places like Middle East and India and Africa. But then the 12 o'clock call would, you know.
Midnight our time?
No, no. 12 noon call that I hold normally would be more amenable to those regions like Europe, even India for that matter, because it would be, I guess, 9 hours later. So it would be 9 p.m.
No, I thought the guy in one of the guys from India, I thought, responded to my mail and said it was he can't come because it's like 7:30 or 8:30 at night over there for 9 o'clock in the morning
meeting. Yeah, I have an idea. How about using Rocket Chat? I mean, you know, it's like easy to just type a few words and just like at least get the caliber team, you know, interested or available at least.
Yeah, I mean people from the caliber team
have shown up.
Ho Chin Ui will join the call occasionally. Victor doesn't, but Ho Chin Ui does. Victor was for a while, but he's busy doing other stuff. So
plus he's in Huawei, so
right.
they have other concerns.
Yes. All right, so we'll look at some alternate times. And maybe the trick is to avoid the split brain thing, right? Where two separate meetings have two completely different groups of people, and so they go off in different directions.
Well, I'll, as long as it's not a conflicting time with me, I'll commit to trying to make the alternate time. So,
okay, and that would actually help people on the West Coast join too.
Yep.
Right, and 8 o'clock at night for the East Coast would be 5 p.m. Yep. On the West Coast. So,
yeah, but the problem is that wouldn't be good for the Indian
right
time
or Europe
or so. Europe.
Yeah, I mean, the whole point is middle of the night for Europe.
Yes. But I got guys in Australia telling me, you know, 9 p.m. is good for them, Japan, the whole of China, maybe not the western parts, but definitely Hong Kong.
But this is a good time for EMEA, right? So
right. This gets EMEA and most of the U.S. Yeah. And Canada and South America kind of thing.
Oh, you mean the 9 a.m. thing?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Except for the West Coast guys.
It's early for them, right? So.
Right. So if we picked a 4 or 5 p.m. for them on alternating weeks, that would hit the West Coast fine and still be able to hit good parts of Asia.
Yeah, I'll go figure it out and propose a few times and days and see what people think. I like Vipin's idea of doing them both on the same day.
Or a little crazy, but
it makes a really long day though for people who are doing to do hit both of them though.
Right.
But okay.
Yeah, well, I think it's something in general that Hyperledger has to figure out, but we can be the groundbreakers or follow Vipin's lead because he's already doing it. So Vipin, how it goes with your group?
I suspect tomorrow we're going to have a thin attendance in both calls, and it's going to be like just a labor of love.
Because you ain't getting paid for it.
No, nor am I getting paid for anything. So
I know we got to work on that.
Huh?
We got to work on that.
Yeah, I know. Especially since we have people from big groups like Oracle on the call. Maybe they can
hire me
as a consultant, whatever. Anyway.
All right. Anyways, we're at the top of the hour. So Kent, thank you for joining.
Yes. Thank you.
Look forward to working with you more closely.
Sure. Let me know what I can do to help.
Yep. And if, well, I guess the first thing would be just join the performance scale working group at Hyperledger.
Yeah, I'll do it now.
And if you want to, you know, read back to yesterday's email and, you know, feel free to add thoughts, especially being new.
Sure.
You know, what we can do to encourage additional people to be on the call. We used to have, you know, 8 to 10 when we were doing the initial metrics paper. And if you have problems finding that, just ping us and we'll send you the link.
Excellent. Thank you.
All right. Anybody else have anything before we end?
Well, the Caliper conference is tomorrow sometime, Caliper Zoom. So, you know, you can always chip in tomorrow and have a chat.
I'll look at doing that. All right. Thanks.
Thanks. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Bye. Ciao.